We're in Galatians 5, 13 and following. And last time we looked through the last half of Galatians, just in a broad sense, wanted to go back and look at some of it a little more specifically than that. In the first section, 13 to 15, Paul says, "For you were called to freedom, brethren, only do not turn your freedom into opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another." Well, this, you were called to freedom, when we're talking about this idea of freedom last week, and the freedom here is, related to salvation, but yet it's so interesting, to put it in terms of freedom. But if you think of it in terms of you were called to freedom, it's not that we were called to merit salvation, but we're actually, it's a sense of grace. But it's this freedom is set in contrast to the flesh here, so don't turn your freedom into the opportunity to the flesh, but rather serve one another through love. And the whole law is fulfilled in the word of you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And yet, it goes on, Paul goes on to show, if you're not following that, then you start chewing on one another, and if you're not careful, you end up just being very cannibalistic, I guess, so to speak, and chew one another up. And so that sets this foundation, or not foundation, it sets this transition as he moves into this next section about walking in the Spirit and the contrast between the Spirit and the flesh. So here the contrast is set in the sense of our calling is to freedom, and that's in contrast to giving an opportunity to flesh. So, we don't have to work for our salvation, but it's not meant to be understood or taken in the liberty of, well, then we can do what we want. Obviously, that's not what's intended. In this next section, though, and I printed some stuff. Like an airplane flight back to Rob. we can't really read through all of this, but I don't know that that would be that useful, but there are some, maybe this would be some helpful things as we go through it. This this comes from some of my pre-work I was doing for my dissertation on forgiveness, but and looking at the Galatians passage, and sometimes, when you think of it in terms of something like forgiveness, where some models looked at forgiveness and the idea of unforgiveness is that one is encapsulated by all these negative emotions, and you get into this terminology of negative emotions, positive emotions, these kinds of things, being in bondage to one's emotions. Well, really, when you look at these lists that would come later, that's a very good way to look at those lists. So you have negative emotions, positive emotions. And so that comes to be a place here. On page 93, the second page you have, at the top of the page, you can really think of forgiveness in the sense of the way I approached it. Two questions that become important is, one is, does forgiving release one from the prison of negative emotions? Because that's the popular view of forgiveness is presented that way right now. That you should forgive so you're released from a prison of negative emotions. However, you could think of it the other way. Or does the act of forgiving place one in step with the Holy Spirit, who then produces the fruit of the Spirit in one's life? So, when you think about this, if I'm speaking of my personal experience, and I say, I've been really angry and harboring these unforgiving attitude towards someone. And I finally forgave them, and I sensed this release of all these negative emotions. Therefore, I conclude that forgiving released me from negative emotions. And that would be a reasonable thing to conclude based upon my experience. However, if you were to look at that theologically, you could say, well, wait a minute. When you forgave, what you did was you were obedient to God. And that aligned you with the Spirit who then produced the fruit of Spirit in your life. And that is the production of the positive. You know, the erasing of the negative, so to speak, or to push them out, and the filling with positive. I think that's a much better theological understanding of what's occurring. And this passage, therefore, while it never speaks of forgiveness, it does have that correlation theologically to what I think is going on in that whole sense.
Well, then can somebody who's not a believer really forgive?
Well, I think in the sense of can they forgive, you know, you can forgive. would they have that sense of the production of the Holy Spirit producing the fruit? No. But I would assume that experientially there would be some of that same things would go on. Though forgiveness at some level has to be redefined if you're not speaking of a biblical forgiveness. Because there's a lack of foundation for the basis of forgiveness apart from biblical. But you could still say, you know, I think experientially, do people that aren't believers, do they forgive and do they, you know, feel better or so forth? Yes, but so from their standpoint, is there a releasing of that? Probably so, but from a biblical perspective of why one forgives or what happens, I think it's from the other standpoint. the exposition in this passage is talking about Galatians. You know, of course, we talked about last week this idea of walking in the Spirit is this a very main part here as he starts in verse 16. But I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not carry out the desires of the flesh. Well, the idea of to walk by the Spirit in the middle of page 94, you can see the second paragraph begins. Says to walk by the Spirit means to be constantly governed or influenced by the Spirit. And what's interesting with that word walk, and we talked about this last week, and it's the NIV usually translates it as live. But as it's used in the New Testament, whenever it's used in a figurative sense, there's always something in the context that shows what governs that walk. So we might have a passage, walk in love. Here it's walk in the Spirit. So the Spirit is what's governing, what's directing, what's giving guidance to that way of life. So it's a call to a way of life, not an occasional action. And it, as it shows here, this walk yields results. There's a promise here. But I say, walk by the Spirit, and he says, and you will not carry out the desires of flesh. So it has a result. It has almost, you could think of it in the sense of there's a promise here. If you'll do this, this will follow. And Paul's thing here is, if you'll walk in the Spirit, if you'll live your life in such a way that you're allowing the Spirit to direct you, you will not carry out the desires of the flesh. So the actions of the promise are conveyed through this, this idea of not carrying out. You will not accomplish. You will not fulfill. You will not perform. And then that heart of the promise is in the sense of, what you will not carry out the desires of the flesh. That longing, that craving of the flesh. And so those become set in that regard. You know, one of the things you run into in our, still in our society, very clearly at this time with Paul and through Galatians, is when we put that there and we say, okay, the goal, the goal becomes not to carry out the desires of the flesh. You know, as Christians, and we want to talk about spirituality, okay, if you want to be spiritual, you cannot carry out the desires of the flesh. That's the number one thing for being spiritual. You can't carry out the desires of the flesh, because that's counterproductive to being spiritual. So, what are we going to do to make sure you do not carry out the desires of the flesh? Well, number one is don't go there. Don't do this. Don't, and we come up with our list. And it makes, it has a certain logical appeal. That we can protect ourselves from gratifying the flesh by a set of rules. However, if we notice here, Paul says the way you avoid accomplishing the flesh's desires is by means of the Spirit. You'll live in the sphere of the Spirit. And that's very counterintuitive, I guess, to the way we would more naturally think. And so that's why I think, in groups, that we always find people setting up rules. Because we have to have these rules so we won't carry out the flesh. Because we can see the rules. We can measure it. You can guide, But here, Paul's deal is walk by the Spirit. So as one walks in the Spirit, it's impossible to fulfill the cravings of the flesh. In this sense of what we're saying is living by the means of the Spirit and in the sphere of the Spirit. So that's what we're really talking about. You're going to live by the means of the Spirit and you're going to live in the sphere of the Spirit. And so it's in that sense of dependent discipline. You have that sense of dependence on the Spirit. You depend on the Spirit. But there's also, that's the passive side, if you would. You're depending on the Spirit. But the active side is that there's a discipline to obey, a discipline to follow, a discipline to walk. And so you have this command to walk with this accompanying promise. And that is explained a little more fully in verse 17. For the flesh sets its desires against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. For these are in opposition to one another, that this sense of Spirit and flesh are, and they're just opposites. They're antithetical to one another. They're they ever had magnets and try to put the reverse poles together. Even little bitty magnets, you can't hardly, you can kind of get them right there, but you can never really, get them there. And if you get some big magnets, my dad used to have these two, they were about that wide and about that thick horseshoe magnets. I used to love to play with those. And if you ever got them stuck together, boy, it was hard to get them apart. But it was fine. It was fun to try to push them together when they were turned opposite. And the way they repel one another. Well, that's this. These are opposite poles. They do not go together. And sometimes that's thought of almost in the sense of dualism. But, we're really not. It really shouldn't be thought of in the sense of dualism, but it's more that these are just opposite poles. The believer's life is, if it's lived in the flesh, then it's not of the Spirit. If it's lived in the Spirit, then it's not going to be of the flesh. It's that. That's the way it's being said here. So walking in the Spirit excludes carrying out the desires of the flesh. And so in that sense, it's pretty simple on paper, black and white. Now, living it out is a little more tough. In this passage, you know, flesh is the antithesis of the spirit. And in Romans 6, Paul uses sin, the personification of sin. And sin is not the personal act of sin, but sin becomes the old sin nature or the sinful disposition, which is what I'd prefer to use it as. You know, but sometimes we hear it as the old nature, the sin nature. But that's where he's used, you know, so that that sinful disposition is this reluctance to do God's will. It is this contrary to who God is. And the new disposition, on the other hand, is one that aligns with God. Well, in Galatians 5, the personification, if we're going to use it that way, then is of the flesh. He's not speaking of sin per se, but of the flesh. And flesh stands for the fallen humanity that each of us inherited from Adam. So flesh is broader than sin nature. It would include your sin nature, but it's just essentially your fallenness. It's the total impact of the original and personal sin. And so that's, so when we're talking about flesh here, it's not flesh in the sense of our skin. It's not fleshly in the sense of those specific kind of immoral things that might be associated with being fleshly. But it's this broad sense of that, you know, that of the of everything associated with sin that we're contaminated with, the original sin, personal sin. And so flesh, is looking at that, as one person says, our sin, our depravity apart from redeeming grace. And you could think of it in the sense that flesh is defining or in reference to who we were prior to being regenerated. So to live according to the flesh, because that's what he moves on here, said, but if you are led by the Spirit, you're not under the law. What does it say about according to the Spirit of flesh? Can't find it at the moment. But the, you know, when we live according to flesh, when we're in that, as opposed to the spirit, then it would be, you know, our life would be in accordance with, or in harmony with the values, the desires of, you know, the present age, and in rejection to the way of God. So we would be conforming ourselves in the sense of self-centeredness as opposed to a Christ-centeredness. So that which is of the flesh is that which is what we produce of our own, independent of assistance from God, assistance from the Holy Spirit. And so he goes on here in verse 18, says, if you're led by the Spirit, you're not under the law. And so what, you know, you know, what do you mean we're not under the law? There are no laws that apply to us? No. It's the law is not what's giving us direction for life. Now, are there laws that, you know, as Christians, are there laws we're supposed to obey? Well, sure, there's state law, federal laws. There's even directions in the Bible that to be classified law. But here, law is in that sense of the Mosaic law that's in place for spirituality, for relationship with God. So do we have laws that we need to keep? Yes, even biblical laws we need to keep. But it's not in that sense of this is what's given us our relationship to God. So if you're led by the Spirit, you're not under the law. And then it goes on and says, now the deeds of the flesh are evident. And so let's just look at that sense of this, page 100, as we move into this. In the middle of the page it says, you know, these, and I think the best way to see that, it says, Paul moves on to give representative but not exhaustive lists of what is produced in the human life by the flesh and the spirit. That, I think the best way to see these, is in, and we talked about this last week, and part of that is because it, of the wording at the end of verse... you know, the deeds of the flesh are imminent, which are, and then... in the verse 21, who practice such things, and this, we have the same thing with the fruit of such, against such things. I mean, it's those wordings that would suggest this is not some exhaustive list, but a representative list. And so we should never look at this and say, these are the deeds of the flesh, or these are the fruit of the Spirit. But these would give us that the idea of what's included in them. And we see from these two lists that, as with the flesh and the spirit, these are the things that come from the flesh and the spirit, so they're mutually exclusive. They're incompatible. The first list describes life that flows from one's own strength and enablement coming from fallen humanity. The other one are the graces that come from the Spirit. The first is, you know, really what the Christian has left behind. Not that a Christian may have done all these things, but this is, these are the kinds of things that would be more consistent with the unregenerate life. Not that unbelievers necessarily done all these things, but these are the things that flow from that. They flow from fallenness. The other list is what comes from of the Spirit. Not that an unbeliever wouldn't have any of these things, but their point of generation would be different. You know, when you come into the sense of these, you know, it's like they paint pictures of lives that are contradictory to one another. You know, just reading the list, you know, those are pictures. If you think of a person that you would describe as one and another, those are very contradictory kind of personalities, and that's what we have here. The list, it's you know, while there's you go through the terms, these terms are, you know, the deeds of the flesh. These are the things that the flesh produces. And remember, the flesh being not some isolated or some bad part of sin, but flesh being the essence of fallenness, the essence of original sin and personal sin. Then on the other hand, the fruit of the Spirit is what the Spirit produces, not what man produces, but what the Spirit indwelling man is capable of producing. And so you have this various list. Then he comes to the very, having given the two lists, he talks about, now in verse 24, now those who belong to Christ have crucified the flesh with its passion and desires. And so here we're seeing that this is what has happened. It's an aorist indicative. You have crucified. This is in reality an event that has happened. You know, this isn't one of these passages that exhorting us to do something. This is a passage saying this has happened. And that's one of the things that, you know, we're in Romans, we'd read a passage like this. Paul would say, this is true, therefore act this way. And we could, you know, we don't have that exact kind of concept here, though it's going to move into us in the next part. You know, the flesh has been crucified, and so he moves into the verse 25. He says, if we live by the Spirit, let us also walk by the Spirit. Now, In this passage, as we mentioned last week, where the New American Standard has walk, that word for walk is not the same as we read earlier. This is a different word for walk, not the normal one that's coming. And NIV translates it excellently here as, if you live by the Spirit, keep in step with the Spirit. Keep in step by the Spirit. And that's what we're seeing here, is that this is a word that means to stay, you know, in formation, to walk in, in step with one another. And so I think, you know, when we look like, if you walk by the Spirit, if you live by the Spirit, if you're led by the Spirit, all of those are very synonymous terms. They're looking at us in the sense of an active, that we have to be dependent upon the Spirit and then to actively live out in discipline. On the other hand, here is if you live by the Spirit, then keep in step with the Spirit. There's the idea here is that, it can almost be in the sense of, since we live by the Spirit, which in the NIV has, you know, it's that given at this point. He's saying, if you do this, since we live by the Spirit, because that's what we've just seen before, you've been crucified. So since we live by the Spirit, then keep in step with the Spirit. And let us not become boastful, challenging one another, envying one another. And that's back up to that earlier part where he says, you know, if you don't live in love, then be careful that you don't chew up one another. And that's kind of where it would be here. The thought then is that one steps is to make one steps in life by the help and guidance of the Spirit. And the three disciplines that are mentioned here then would be to walk, be led, and to keep in step with the Spirit. So Paul paints that, having painted this, going through this passage about spirituality and salvation, the soteriological aspect that's not by the law. Now the very strong introduction of the Spirit, but setting the Spirit in contrast to the flesh, in that the way you control the flesh is not with the law. It's with the Spirit. You don't fight the flesh by law. The law isn't parallel to the flesh. The law isn't the flesh. But the law and the flesh almost go together in the sense of that they do not empower them. You know, there's no empowerment from them. The law cannot empower you to fight the flesh. And in some ways, the law, towards spirituality would lead one in that direction. But on contrast to that, the Spirit is an antithesis to the flesh. And if you live in the Spirit, you cannot live in the flesh. So anyway, that takes us through that passage. So questions, thoughts?
Well, that's almost the opposite of what when we've been studying the disciplines, church disciplines. We've kind of been taught that you have to start practicing them before it becomes part of you. And that this is what we're saying here is that you can't do that.
And that's one of the things that's really tight. And, you can find some people that write real well on disciplines at that point. But there is that part, that you word it a certain way, you start saying it a certain way, if I read my Bible, then God will bless me. And if you word it that way, then that's really not what's going on. But experientially, you may find out, when I read the Bible, God blessed me. And so we very quickly switch that around to saying, if you'll read the Bible, God will bless you. And those two aren't not necessarily the same. You know, now do we need the discipline to, you know, have that time to read the Bible? Yes. But it's that when I read the Bible, am I dependent upon the Spirit to enlighten me, to teach? And so it's that constant, you know, those two have to be together. But it's very easy to go down the path. And we often see this with people, you know, and I think today we see it all the time. Not just today, it's been for a long time. And Dr. Hendricks at Dallas Seminary, you know, was one that would, he would always put it in these different terms. He would say, if you find something that works in your church, promise me you'll write a book on it. Blackaby says in his experience in God that if Moses, you know, if the burning bush was to occur today, there would be all these burning bush seminars. That's, you know, what we do with it, you know. And I think that's, you know, and in that what happens, it's not that I'm sharing my experience, but I start telling you, this is how you'll be blessed. And there's a danger in that. As opposed to saying, you know, here's a way. I've found that very few people will say, you know, whatever. It's important that you have communion with God. And you might find that best, or even if we say read the Bible, let's just say read the Bible, make it a little more, even more specific than that, that you should read the Bible, that you should read it, you know, here, you know, here's 15 different ideas. Maybe one of those work, maybe you've got a 16th. Let me just give you 15 to get you started and you figure out one that works for you. No, it'll be, you need to get up at 5:31 in the morning, and you need to read Romans 1:1 today and Romans 1:2 tomorrow. I mean, it becomes, this is what works for me, therefore it will work for you. And I think, you know, we start bridging into that sense of rules as opposed to realizing this that dynamic of spirituality and that there's lots of different, you know, you're a different person. What's important is, you know, how are you approaching, God? But so I think, you know, there are the disciplines are important, or they can really add to one's life, but how do you approach the disciplines? Do you approach the discipline as a kind of a genie to make God do something for you, or do you approach the disciplines as exactly that? This is a discipline to place myself in a position, you know, kind of like I'm a cup and I'm placing myself, you know, this cup in an open position that God could fill it. And so it does, you know, it does matter on your attitude toward it. Well, are there prayer requests?